Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
He does, deep to right. If it's fair, it's long gone. And the Cubs lead by a score of 3-2. Anthony Rizzo with a booming home run. And listen to the Cub fans here at Miller Park.
Well, what was great about the call is actually before it happened, he says, if Rizzo can hit a home run here, it'll put them in front, and the next pitch he hit it out.
Here, actually, I have that first part here. I'll play that part.
Let's see if Anthony Rizzo can launch one. He does, deep to right. If it's fair, it's long gone. And the Cubs lead by a score of 3-2.
That was, I'll be honest with you. I've actually done that before, Matt. And it Joe Putnam just sits there and goes, you just get a gut feeling about something. They don't all work out. I remember doing, it was a 4th of July game. And State College was down by a run. And I said, Joe, there's no issue here. I said, as soon as Morgan hits the next pitch for a grand slam, I said, they'll be in front by three. And then there's a drive. He says, how do you do that? I said, I don't know. Look at me.
You see, I've done that one time, but I wasn't on air for it. I was just at a Pirates game, actually, with a couple of friends. And Starling Marte hit a walk-off homer. And I said, he's gonna hit one out of the park. I know it. And he did, like, two pitches later. But I don't think I would ever do that. If I were calling a game, I'd be scared to, because then I'd be like, well, I guess that wasn't it.
You know what? That's one of the great myths about this business. And I can't stand it. And that is, he's hit 33 consecutive free throws. Oh, you just jinxed him. No, I just gave you information. I'm not shooting. Okay, I'm not the one shooting it. He's shooting it. I'm just telling you he's made 33 in a row. You can't mention he has a no-hitter. Yes, you can mention he has a no-hitter. Yes, you can. That's what always gets me about that. Yes, you can mention he has a no-hitter.
See, the broadcaster in me says, yes, I agree, but the fan in me is guilty of doing said thing that you just said.
No, you're completely right.
Yeah, that's just the fan in me. And I'm like, no, it's okay. I have to remind myself of that.
It's information. It's my job to tell you what's going on.
That's exactly right.
So if Penn State is 12, when Penn State was 11 for 11 on third down in the Fiesta Bowl and I said it, oh, no, they're not going to get it. Well, guess what? They converted that play. And now they became 12 of 12 on third down in the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, that's why your job is to convey information. Oh, you can't tell him that he's made 42 straight free throws. He's going to miss. Well, I'm not shooting it. He is. It's my job to tell you he's made 42 in a row. The announcer jinx thing is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard in my life. And I mean legitimately stupid. I'm not doing my job if I don't tell you. I come up with all sorts of clever ways to say they're throwing a no-hitter. So far, no one's reached base. We're in the seventh. I just say so far the dude has a perfect game. He's faced 14 up, 14 down. Seriously, you're not doing your job if you don't say that stuff. I think it's absurd. I think it's ridiculous. It's one of those make-believe things that you're going to jinx it. I'm going to jinx it. Really? Jinx what? I'm not participating. My job is to be the conduit to explain what's going on. Now I know, Matt, you're sitting there. The fan of you is saying, I don't know. Can't have, and I understand that, but that still, that doesn't matter.
I know. I've been there many times, and I was even worse than I was now, like when I was younger, because I used to think Joe Buck was the biggest jinx for the Eagles during that three years stint where they lost all the NFC Championship games, and I obviously knew it was obviously not Joe Buck's fault, but like that'd be like the fifth thing on my list, and I look at myself now, I'm like, well, not really, but. Fans just look for things to blame when their team loses, and the announcers get the brink of it. Chris Collinsworth, same thing now, and he gets it at Ever City.
You're just giving information. And by giving information, you're trying to enhance the experience of the people listening or watching. If someone is throwing a perfect game, if someone has completed 12 consecutive passes, if someone has hit 8 straight shots, if someone's hit 33 free throws in a row, if a team is 10 for 10 on third down, if a place kicker is 10 for 10 in field goals this year, it is my job to tell you he is 10 for 10 in field goals this year. Now, look, does it work out where a guy misses or whatever? Of course. I mean, the last game Joe coached, Dembke, the kicker for Illinois, had been 10 for 10 in field goals. And so he went to tie the game in the snow. It slid right and hit the upright. Well, it's not me telling you he's 10 for 10. It's the fact is it was the hold or it was him. Or he slipped, whatever. He missed. I didn't miss. I just told you he hadn't missed yet. What I that one has always bothered me. My job is not to sit there and to be and to take care of, quote, the luck factor. Hey, the luck factor is handled by people who are playing and coaching. They handle, you make your own luck. Hey, my job's to tell you that he stepped out of bounds at the 42. He's still 3 yards shy of a first down. My job is to tell you that if something, pro or con, look, he's missed his last 9 passes. Now, am I jinxing him by saying he's missed his last 9 passes? Of course not. People don't care about that. But if I tell you he's hit his last 9 passes, what'd you tell us that for? Why'd you do that? You know, Alexander's really struggled at the free throw line. He's only 4 for his last 14. Right? That's okay. But if I tell you Alexander's hit 14 consecutive free throws, what did you tell us that for? I don't know, because I want to let you know he's on a roll and in a really good rhythm. Maybe. Maybe I did a little bit of research, didn't show up with 2 rosters. That's what I've always been bothered by that.
So look, everybody's a critic.
I haven't had people criticize me about it, but I see it all or hear it all. Jeff Tarman's the worst. Hey, he's at 22 straight free throws. Oh, what'd you tell him? Lamar's hit 22 straight free throws. Because he's hit 22 straight free throws. Okay. Don't you think the fans want to know? Jeff, and then he'll miss. Jeff will go, you jinxed it. I'm like, His favorite story is 2000. Nate Kading, who had a really good career in the NFL. As a true freshman kicker for Iowa, he came into the game and was really struggling. So I mentioned, here's Kading. He's been struggling. And I think at that, he was like 4 of 10 or something like that. So I said it. Now, naturally, he kicked 4 field goals in the game, and they won the game. He's never let me forget that. I said, well, Jeff, what do you want me to do? I mean, I wasn't the one missing him. He was. It turns out he's a really, really good kicker. He had a really long career in the NFL, mostly with the Chargers. Oh, the announcer jinx. If you got a no-hitter going... Right, especially if it's like the 6th inning on. Say you got a no-hitter. perfect game? Say it. Your job as the announcer to tell people exactly what they are listening to and why. But skirting around it, he's walked too, but those are the only ones that have reached base so far in the ball game. Here's the 2-1. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. All right. This is okay. I always get these emails during break. One is, can you speak July 26th in Williamsport? I said yes. Can you speak August 7th in York? I said yes. And then I got something about a video vignette that a sponsor wants me to do for the radio network. Now, what was the part about radio they didn't get? No, I'm just kidding. It's a video thing. Well, wait a minute. Ooh.
I see what you did there.
No, I'm supposed to actually it's going to be a new corporate sponsor, and I'm supposed to speak to them. What's today, the 12th?
It is.
So, I'm supposed to speak to them next Tuesday. That's fine. I'll do like I do with all the other ones. Yeah, I'll do that. Sure, I'll do that. Yeah, why not? I'm trying to think if I ever have said no to something. Well, in fact, I think I just said no to something. Actually, like 2 weeks ago, and it was like, my first thought was, I'm not doing that. There's no way. That is not in my lane. I want to stay in my lane here. Harry Mays is going to join us in the next half hour. We're going to talk a lot more about Philly sports. We'll get into it about the Phillies, the Sixers, whether Harry is going to be the one in charge of convincing LeBron James that Philly is a great place to play. I mean, could be. I don't know. Maybe Harry's making the selection. We'll talk about the Phillies. The Eagles own the city. You notice nobody talks about the Flyers. Villanova. By the way, of course, Villanova, national champions in basketball, but today the Penn State basketball team was honored at the state capitol for their NIT championship.
And Villanova was there yesterday.
So Villanova went yesterday, and today was Penn State's turn. And once again, Lamar Stevens outdressed Patrick Chambers. Lamar is a sharp dresser. It's when he wants to. He's a sharp dresser when he wants to be. He's poised and primed. If he's healthy, he's poised and primed to have another really good season. I thought when Lamar Stevens got here, he'd be a 1,500-point scorer. But that was my thought, was being a 1,500-point scorer was over 4 years. Well, he's at over 1,000 now after 2 years. And, of course, he'll be back. Mike Watkins is back. John Harris is back. And there's Josh Reeves. You know, it's one thing about Reeves. Reeves is the guy. This is what I've said, always said about Saquon Barkley made everybody around him better. Trace McSorley was the one guy that really made Saquon Barkley better. And that's Josh Reeves when it comes to basketball. He is the guy. You had to pick one guy that has the ability to make everybody else around him better. That's why he's so important to what they do. It's not that Lamar doesn't make people around him better. He does. But he plays a different position. I believe I saw today Kyle Vasey, the long snapper, got a scholarship. Good for him. A thrill for him. He is such a good guy. And I'm going to take a little quick sneak peek tonight, go over to the ballpark and watch Nick Dunn work out tonight. Yeah, watch him take a few cuts. Okay, so here's the idea they're trying to run past me. All right, I'm not going to tell you the sponsor. I'm supposed to be dressed as one of the individuals that works there. All right, and then I'm going to be asked different questions about different Penn State traditions.
Okay.
And then they're supposed to tie this all in.
Interesting.
That's great. It's always been one of my goals to work there. Like I said, I didn't tell you who it was for, so. What do you say, Matt, when Sean gets back, the three of us will take a road trip.
I'm game for that.
Oh, no, because Cape Cod, on June 21st, they're having Quahog Day. A proud Cape Cod tradition. On Thursday the 21st at the Pilot House Restaurant and Sandwich on Cape Cod. Now, a quahog happens to be a clam. And we would get to meet the official mascot, Doug the Quahog. What do you think? It's the 10th annual event. We should go.
I've never had one, so that would be a first time for me, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, do we know how to have fun or what?
Totally.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Why don't they just build a couple of sidewalks? Show's over. What? Tell me I'm wrong. All right. From 97.5, The Fanatic, and we do believe he is now the de facto general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, Harry Mays. Harry, welcome. Who are you picking next week?
Hey, Steve, great to be with you, man. Yeah, aren't all of us sports talk show hosts de facto general managers in real life, right?
We are all of that and much more. Have you ever in your career seen something like the Colangelo thing happen and play out the way it did?
One of the most bizarre stories in and around sports. I mean, I can't even really call it a sports story, but just craziness. I mean, I'm still trying to sort of wrap my arms around, you know, what would motivate someone, you know, to do that. I mean, outside of just, I guess, you know, just ego and having a lot of insecurity all at the same time, and then having, you know, one of your family members, you know, your closest family member, your spouse, you know, on there under assumed, you know, names, and defending you and, you know, fighting back with fans and trying to influence reporters to ask about certain issues with the team. I mean, it's just total craziness. The one good thing is, I think, outside of the investigation, you know, having to take its course and run about, you know, 8-9 days, whatever it took, you know, people wanted answers, and they wanted answers immediately, and, you know, we wanted to find out who did it, and, you know, if it was Colangelo or anybody close to him, he's got to be gone. And, you know, it took about 9 days, but I think the Sixers handled it properly, and they've moved on. You know, Brett Brown is now in charge of basically everything basketball in the interim, and I think he's widely respected, you know, outside of Philadelphia and, of course, San Antonio from where he came. So I think the damage control was pretty good, and I think they're going to survive it. Now, if that means a guarantee that they're going to be able to pull off, you know, a LeBron James free agency acquisition or a Paul George, that, you know, we still don't know, and I don't know how much of that would be up to Brett Brown. I think a lot of it, you know, it's just where these guys decide to spend the rest of their career, and that's certainly not a guarantee. But what a crazy week.
But when it comes to it is a crazy week, but when it comes to a free agent, for example, and the owner of the Sixers has a lot of money and appears to be a rather personable guy, isn't that usually when it comes to the level of free agent you're talking about, the level they're eventually going to have to go to is to talk to him?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, you know, you're talking about a max deal, you know, somewhere around 30, like, is it like $35 million, which they don't quite have right now as their books look. They'd have to move Jared Bayless or do something with his contract to free up a little over $8 million, and then they could offer LeBron the max. But it really comes down to, you know, do you have the money that I want? do you have the players that I can win with? And, LeBron is looking for intelligent basketball players with skill. And I think they've got that. They're young, but they've got smart, high IQ basketball players with skill that are still developing. Now, whether he wants to come here, and have them develop for a year or two, I don't know that the Sixers are quite ready to win a championship yet, even with LeBron, when you're staring it down Golden State. But yeah, the ownership would have to get involved. They'd probably run a team of Brett Brown, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and the owner, over there, and try to convince whoever it is to come here.
There's another part too. I'll expand on the LeBron part for a moment. If you want to prolong his career, what's a way to do it? Get him off the ball when you're bringing the ball up offensively. Well, right. With Ben Simmons, that may add 2 years to his career, because now you're not trying to bust your backside trying to cross the timeline.
Exactly. And, as you saw with the playoffs this year, and really the entire season and he played all 82 games. This is the eighth straight year he's gone to the finals. The mileage on the tread, if I'm LeBron, you saw the way he reacted after regulation going into overtime when J.R. Smith had the brain cramp and dribbled the ball out with 4 seconds left, not knowing what the score was. He was just exasperated. He was just shot. You knew he was done, and the Cavaliers were done then. And I think, he just gave everything he had. And I think the next spot where he wants to go, he doesn't want to have to be that guy to have to carry the team. I totally agree with you. And although some people say that he needs the ball in his hands all the time, I think he's sort of a chameleon. Because he's so talented and can really play any position on the court and really do anything that's needed, I think that Philadelphia is a fit, despite what a lot of people are saying right now that it isn't.
Yeah. What about the draft part of it? The last few years, they've drafted within the top five. That's how you net Embiid and how you net Simmons and how you net Markelle Fultz. Well, they don't have that this time around. So how do you sense Brett Brown might want to play this?
Well, they had Mikal Bridges in this afternoon. They had Miles Bridges in a couple days ago, the kid from Michigan State who you know well. But Mikal Bridges from Villanova, a local guy, and they had him in for a private workout this afternoon. They had about four or five other guys in the morning as a group, but they wanted Mikal as a solo workout. So that tells me a little something. I know there's interest. He's a local guy, and some people in his family have said that the Sixers are expressing a lot of interest in him. He presents one of those bigs that can switch on screens and play defense. He's long. He's got a little bit of range with his shot. I think he would be a nice fit, although he's not a guy that's going to come in in year one and blow the doors off. You're going to have to sort of develop him within your system. But I think he's got that basketball IQ that Brett Brown is looking for. They also looked at Lonnie Walker, the kid out of Reading that went to Miami for a year. Incredible athleticism with him, 6'5" guard. I don't know exactly what position they're looking to do. A lot of it, if they take a guard, tells me a lot about what they think of Markelle Fultz. Sexton is a guy that could be in that mix right around that spot, although he doesn't shoot it very well. Zaire Smith, maybe even, for the kid from Texas Tech. So I don't know which way they're going to go. It's best player available, I would assume. And if it's Mikal Bridges is sitting there at 10, I don't think there's any way they pass him up.
Yeah, the way I look at it, and I'll find out how you feel too, is that I look at Mikal Bridges, excellent all-around player, best defender of the three, easily.
Yes.
Miles Bridges, probably best distributor, to the point where you've got to force him to shoot more, and he has a really nice left-handed outside shot. Weakest of that group is Lonnie Walker, who is more of an NBA-type player, but not the all-around player.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Although, didn't Miles Bridges start to stretch it out a little bit and shoot a little bit of the three towards the second half of that Big Ten season? I think he knew he was going to go pro, and that's something that scouts are going to want to see.
Tommy Izzo told him to. He said he pulled him aside at one point.
Is that right,
Harry? And he said, "Hey, look," he says, "we're not going to win unless you shoot more," because he does have a really nice outside shot.
Yeah, he's got a good release for a big guy.
Yeah, really good release. Now I have to ask you about the Phillies.
Yeah,
a little more enthusiasm there, Harry. No. Obviously, they've gone through the slump. they're a young team in a lot of ways. But I have to ask you about Franco. You and I both know that a guy can come out of the gate, play well. Austin Meadows is doing that right now with Pittsburgh. You and I also know that once everybody gets a book on you, in order to have major league longevity, you need to adjust back. Has Franco not adjusted back?
Well, not fully, obviously. It's, you know, it's obviously, it's like the, I call it the adjust to the adjustment, which is basically what you just outlined. And yeah, he's going through that, some struggles. Started off the season, you know, pretty good. And now he, and along with everybody else, is, you know, is basically in an offensive funk, including Herrera and Hernandez, which are really arguably their two best players. The young guys like Kingery and Hoskins, I expected, you know, to have some struggles. Hoskins sort of is adjust, trying to adjust to the adjustment, because he came in, you know, August of last year and just hit the cover off the ball for the 6-7 weeks that he was up. A lot of home runs too. But I think they're all, the problem is they're all sort of going through a lot of the same things at once. And although they got some pretty good starting pitching, you know, you got to hit the ball. You got to be able to score 4 or 5 runs a night to be able to really, you know, avoid losing streaks like they're going through. Now, tonight they have Nola, who's probably their best pitcher and has been pitching ace-like since about the middle of last year. And he goes tonight, so they'll definitely have a chance and may only need to score 3 runs, you know, to win a game with him on the hill tonight. But they're all sort of struggling right now, and I think the organization has a lot of guys that play similar positions, you know, guys that they can move around, and they're sort of trying things out, because I think what they're trying to do is put themselves in a position for a trade, you know, to maybe get a Machado before he hits free agency and have a chance to sort of court him and lock him up as one of their own. So that's sort of my theory that I'm going with right now.
Now and it's an interesting one, because obviously J.P. Crawford played third base the other night, and that's not really your long-term solution there.
Right, yeah, he's definitely not. And, you know, they like they said, they're juggling around all these infielders. Kingery's not a shortstop. He's a real second baseman, and I think that's part of the reason for his struggles at the plate is his head swimming right now. You know, Jake Arrieta kind of called him out, singled him out in that little tirade that he went through about a week or so ago. And I just think the kid is just it's everything's going 100 miles an hour for him. But Crawford, yeah, definitely not a third baseman, but has a lot of talent and at shortstop. And actually, the other night had 2 base hits. I believe it was Sunday's game, and really stroked the ball pretty well. So maybe he's starting to find himself at the plate.
Harry, you and I both know that one of the primary reasons Gabe Kapler is the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies is that he convinced them about his strong link to analytics. And just like Aaron Boone did the same thing with the Yankees. You're watching this in practical application. What do you think of it?
Well, it's like I think of analytics in all sports. There's a place for it, but I think sometimes people get a little crazy with it. You know, with all these shifts, they're the worst team, you know, with the results of their shifts in baseball. And that was part of Arrieta's problem when he went off on, you know, to the media and, you know, outed his manager and a couple of the players. And although he may not have been right to do it in that forum, what he was saying was fact. So that, you know, that's all analytically driven. The other thing is this whole thing about the bullpen. I mean, I just think, you know, maybe you and I need to relearn the game. I don't know. But we come from the time where, you know, when guys came to the ballpark, they knew what their role was going to be that night. You know, if we get in trouble in the sixth inning, I'm going to come in and get 2 outs to get us to the seventh. And, you know, then they're going to have a setup guy, and then they're going to have a closer. And maybe they look for 4 outs from the closer if they need it. But by and large, he's coming in the ninth inning, and it's going to be this guy. All that is sort of thrown, you know, out the window right now, and I can't figure that out. I don't know if that's really good. You know, same thing with the lineup. Some guys, you know, come to the ballpark not knowing whether they're playing or where they're playing. That's the part of it that I don't really understand. And you know, maybe Gabe Kapler's, you know, well, not maybe, he is learning as he's going, because I think all these young managers need to learn as they go. But I'm scratching my head at a lot of it, Steve.
I don't care, Harry, whether it's football, basketball, baseball. You know, I like numbers to support or not support what I'm looking at, but I use it as support. I mean, to me, a big part of it, and I don't care whether it's you doing a show, I'm doing a game, whatever, or they're coaching it. To me, it's feel and instinct is a real important part of it. And maybe numbers may prove you wrong, so you change up a little bit. But to me, that's the use of it, not living and dying by it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a combination. And that's why I think there is a role for analytics and statistics and everything in all these sports, some more than others. I mean, we're seeing it in golf too. These guys don't do anything now without a TrackMan device, you know, when they're on the driving range or what have you. It's in every sport, and I don't think it's going to go away. But I think to rely too heavily on it, and like you said, away from instinct and sort of a feel and your gut, and just knowing the game and having experience in the game, I think there needs to be a combination of it, a marriage of it, not just one sort of dominating the other.
And when it comes to the golf course part of it, Harry, look, if I hit a wedge in and it hits the green, right, I don't care what the card said, I'm on the green.
Yeah, right. I'm happy, right?
I mean, I'm high-fiving. This is feeling pretty good. I can get bogey.
Yeah, right. Well, you see it. You watch all this stuff too, like I do. These guys get annoyed when they'll let the club fly out of the hand. That Matsuyama guy, and here he is, 10 feet from the pin. And I'm like, what was he looking? What did he want to hold it?
Yeah, he looks at it like, oh, I mishit it. You mishit it. I'm hugging everybody in the group.
Right. I'm with you.
Harry, absolute pleasure. It's the first time we've had you on. I enjoyed every second of it. Thanks a lot for your time. You always do great work.
Oh, yeah, and you asked me who I like next week or this week. I think Justin Rose is the play, but my sentimental favorite is Phil Mickelson.
Sentimental, same way. I feel the same way about Mickelson. Problem is 131st in fairways hit. That's a big problem.
I know.
Rose hasn't shot higher than 73 all season.
Yeah, he's on fire right now.
I mean, that's shot higher than 73 all season.
Yeah. Also, I wouldn't mind seeing Ricky Fowler get his first. And as far as a long shot, I'd go with Emiliano Grillo from Argentina.
Yeah.
125-1.
Yeah, that's not bad. I like that.
Yeah. No,
those are all good, solid picks. If somehow Fowler putts better, he can win this thing.
He can. He definitely can.
Harry, thanks. Great respect for your work. Hope to have you back soon.
Anytime, Steve. You got it. Enjoy the Open.
That's Harry Mays joining us from 97.5, the Fanatic of Philadelphia. He's one of the best. One of the best. All right. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, they go through mandatory workouts and teams make moves. The Oakland Raiders have cut Christian Hackenberg. That means the Raiders will get to keep their seventh-round pick. Remember, the trade with the Jets was Hackenberg to the Raiders for a conditional seventh-round pick. Well, the Raiders cut Christian today. That means they get to keep their seventh-round pick. So, where he goes from here, I don't know. Now, look, he'll end up in some camp because they're always looking for people. But, again, that's got to be a big blow to him to have this happen.
That was quick.
It was, but there are 30 teams in a league, and I think he'll end up signing with someone. The question is, can he get himself to, let's be straight about this. Can he get himself to be that third quarterback? Not a second, but a third. Where you can hang in there long enough to really kind of keep everything going. Can you hang in there long enough? Then finally, you know, as everyone knows, when it comes to the quarterback position, you get to week 8 or 9. Week 8 or 9? I mean, how many of the starters are actually out there? Not many. So I think he's still going to have a shot with somebody, but can he somehow get himself in at minimum as a third? You know, the guy that on Sunday is the 46th player, where they have two quarterbacks and you're dressed, but you're not active unless the first two quarterbacks get hurt. Now, they both have to get hurt for you to play. That's happened before. I remember watching a Bears game, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, and suddenly, up, he's in the game. He ended up being the starter the next week, too. So I think that's what he has to do. I know he's tried to change his footwork. He has gone to a new football guru. The guy that really seemed to know him best, I thought, is Carson Palmer's brother, Jordan Palmer. Jordan Palmer seemed to have when Christian had, and I was at the workout, Christian had a great pro day workout. I mean, and I'm talking great. And Kim Jones was there, too, because Kim was standing with me most of the time. And Christian had not a good, but a great pro day workout. Now, what's the key to a great pro day workout? Well, look, you're doing 7-on-7 stuff, for goodness sakes. There's no pressure on you. There are not people consumed with hate chasing you. And it's the people consumed with hate that have chased him over time that I think ended up messing his footwork up, and he has not really been able to regain it. When he worked with Jordan Palmer, Jordan was able to get him where the footwork was workable. And that made him a second-round pick. Just like Peyton Manning had to go to David Cutcliffe, maybe in this case, because I thought that was the best I had seen Christian's footwork, maybe it's time for Christian to go back to Jordan Palmer. There's no doubt he has the arm. There's no doubt he has the mind. The footwork part is a part that really has hurt him.